Kiki turned her head to the left, peering at me with a blue eye.
Catch topaz? Silk? She asked.
Yes. Let's fly.
Kiki moved.
The long grasses blurred past my feet until I could no longer see them in the darkness.
I held my position as we traveled over the plains.
It felt as if I rode on top of a windstorm rather than a horse. When the moon reached its apex, I felt the sand seeds' magic thin, then disappear.
No longer surrounded by their power,
I used my magic to search for Iris.
I'm here, she said in my mind, and I saw through her eyes that they had made camp by Blood Rock.
Wake Cahill, I told her. We have to return to the keep as fast as we can. Tula's still in danger.
She is well guarded.
He has powerful magic.
We're on our way.
I sent my awareness toward the keep, hoping to warn them.
My mind touched Hayes dozing in his office.
He flinched away from me in horror and raised a stronger barrier.
The other Master Magician's defenses were as well constructed as the towers in which they slept.
Growing weary with the effort, I pulled back.
Kiki overtook Iris and Cahill on the Citadel Road just as the sky began to lighten. I had only a moment to wonder how she had managed a 2-day journey in one night before we sped past the others.
Need rest? I asked her, glancing behind in time to see Iris and Cahill wave me on.
No. But my legs burned as if they were on fire.
I aimed blue cooling thoughts at them, and they numbed.
We were within sight of the marble gates of the Citadel when all desire to rest fled my mind. A sudden and intense feeling of terrified helplessness pressed on my body.
Tula.
I launched my awareness toward the keep, searching for someone, anyone, to warn. The guards with Tula didn't have any magic.
While I could read the minds of non-magicians, they had no power to hear me. Desperate. I kept hunting.
My mind found Dax.
He was in the middle of a practice bout, learning to parry and lunge with a wooden sword.
Tula! I screamed in his mind. Danger! Get help!
He dropped his sword in surprise and was whacked in the ribs by his opponent.
Yelena?
He spun around, looking for me.
Tula's in danger! Go! Now! I ordered.
Then my connection to him severed.
It felt as if someone had drawn a stone curtain down between us.
Time slowed to drips of molasses as we entered the Citadel and navigated the busy streets.
It seemed as if the entire population walked in the streets.
Their unhurried pace clogged the roadway. The air sparked with the perfect cooling season temperature, and a perfect contrast to the fire in my heart. I wanted to scream at the crowd to move.
Kiki, sensing my urgency, stepped up her pace and nudged the dawdlers out of our way.
A few curses followed us.
Kiki startled the guards at the keep's entrance when she refused to stop.
She headed straight to the infirmary and even climbed the stairs, stopping only when we had reached the door. I slid from her saddle.
Racing toward Tula's room, I feared the worst when I spotted her guards lying in the corridor.
I jumped over them and burst into her room.
The door slammed against the wall.
The noise echoed off the cold marble, but failed to rouse Tula. Her lifeless eyes stared at nothing.
Her bloodless lips were frozen in a grimace of horror and pain.
My fingers sought a pulse.
Her skin felt icy and stiff. Black bruises ringed her neck. Too late. Or was I?
I placed my hand on her throat, pulling power to me.
In my mind's eye, I saw her crushed windpipe.
She had been strangled.
I sent a bubble of power to reinflate it, sending air into her lungs.
I focused on her heart, willing it to pump.
Her heartbeat and air filled her lungs, but the dullness refused to leave her eyes. I pushed harder.
Her skin warmed and flushed. Her chest rose and fell. Yet when I stopped, her blood stilled and she failed to take another breath. He had stolen her soul.
I couldn't revive her.
A heavy arm rested on my shoulder.
There is nothing more you can do, Iris said.
I glanced around.
Behind me stood Cahill, Leaf, Dax, Rose, and Hayes. They crowded the small room, and I hadn't even noticed their arrival. Tula's skin cooled under my fingers.
I pulled my hand away.
A sharp, bone-crushing exhaustion settled over me.
I dropped to the floor, closed my eyes, and rested my head in my hands.
My fault. My fault.
I should never have left her. The room erupted with sound and activity, but I ignored them as tears poured down my face. I wanted to dissolve into the floor, mixing myself with the hard stone. A stone had a single purpose: to be. No complicated promises, no worries, and no feelings. I lowered my cheek to the smooth marble. The cold stung my fevered skin. Only when the noise in the room faded did I open my eyes, and saw a scrap of paper lying under Tula's bed. It must have fallen off when I had tried to put life into her body. I reached for it, thinking it had been Tula's. The words written on the paper cut through the fog of my grief like Moon Man's scimitar. The note said, "I have Opal. I will exchange Opal for Yelena Zoltana at the next rising of the full moon. Send Tula's grief flag up First Magician's Tower as a sign of agreement, and Opal will not be harmed. More instructions will follow." Chapter 23.
"We'll send Tula's grief flag up, but we're not exchanging Yelena for Opal," Iris insisted. "We have 2 weeks until the full moon. That should give us enough time to find Opal."
Again, loud arguments echoed through the magician's meeting room. Zatora had returned from her mission for the council, so all four master magicians were there, as well as Tula's family, Leif, and the captain of the keep's guard. Leif had tried to ask me about the sand seeds before the meeting started, but I cut him off with an angry response. I still couldn't look at him without seeing his 8-year-old face in the bushes, watching my kidnapping and doing nothing. The events that had occurred after I discovered the ransom note felt as if they happened in a dream. Once everyone settled down, the killer's movements prior to attacking Tula were uncovered. He obtained a position with the keep's gardeners. Unfortunately, the people he worked with couldn't agree on his facial features, and Bane had drawn 4 completely different men from their descriptions. They also failed to remember his name. With 10 magical souls, Ferda obtained enough power to equal a master magician. He concealed his presence in the keep with ease and confused those he worked with. Tula's guards were shot with tiny darts dipped in curare. They could only recall seeing one of the gardeners delivering some medicinal plants to Haze before their muscles froze. The fact that Ferda had infiltrated the keep had put the keep's guards in serious trouble.
"He was living in the keep, and we had no clue," Rose said. Her powerful voice rose over the din. "What makes you think we can find him now?"
Tula's mother and father drew in horrified breaths. They had arrived the day before. The news of her passing had shocked them to their core. I could see in their drawn faces and in their haunted gazes that knowing the same man held Opal made their lives a living nightmare. Just like mine.
"Give him Yelena," Rose said into the now quiet room. "She was able to animate Tula. She has the power to handle this killer."
"We don't want anyone else harmed," said Tula's father.
He wore a simple brown tunic and pants. His large hands were rough with calluses and burn scars, evidence of a lifetime of working with molten glass.
"No, Rose," Iris admonished. "She doesn't have full control of her magic yet. Probably the main reason he wants her. If he stole her magic, think how powerful he would then be."
Bane, who had translated the markings on the killer's skin, told the group in the meeting room that the purpose of the man's quest was written in his tattoos. Bane's information matched what Moonman had told me. Ferda performed an ancient Ifi binding ritual that used intimidation and torture to turn a victim into a willing slave. When all free will had been surrendered, the victim was murdered, and her soul's magic was directed into Ferda, increasing his own power. He had targeted 15 and 16-year-old girls because their magic potential was just beginning. Sour bile churned in my stomach as I listened to Bane's explanation. Rayad and Mogkin's tactics in Ixia to increase Mogkin's magic had been sickeningly familiar. Although they hadn't raped or killed their 32 victims, they tortured their souls from them, leaving them mindless. Just as horrible.
Ferda had gained 11 souls. According to the ritual, the 12th soul must go to him willingly. No kidnapping for the final ritual, which, when completed, would give him almost unlimited power.
Debate on why Tula survived the initial attack led to a guess that Ferda had been close to being discovered and fled before finishing the ritual.
Yelena should be protected at all times, Iris said.
Her words brought me back to the meeting.
If we can't find him, we'll set up an ambush near the exchange site and apprehend him that way.
The magicians continued to argue. It seemed as if I would have no say in the plans. It didn't matter. I would either find Ferda or be at that exchange site. I had failed Tula. I wasn't going to let Opal suffer the same fate. A messenger from the council arrived as the meeting ended. He handed Rose a scroll. She read it, then thrust the paper at Iris in what appeared to be disgust. Iris's shoulders drooped when she scanned the document.
What else has gone wrong? I asked her in my mind.
Another situation to deal with. This one is not life-threatening, though, just bad timing, she said. At least this will be another chance for you to practice your diplomacy.
How?
An Ixian delegation is expected to arrive in 6 days.
So soon?
I had thought the messenger with the council's reply had just left.
Yelena, it's been 5 days. It's a 2-day ride to the Ixian border and a 30-day to the commander's castle.
5 days.
So much had happened in those 5 days that I felt as if I lived one endless day. Difficult, too, to believe I had been living in Citia for only 2.5 seasons. Almost 30 years gone in what seemed like a fortnight. My ache for Valak hadn't dulled, and I wondered if meeting the northern delegation would cause me to miss him more. I followed the others from the room. In the hallway outside, Zatora linked her arm in mine.
I need some help, she said, guiding me from the Keep's administration building and toward her tower.
But I need to get some rest and not go searching the Citadel for Opal, Zatora said.
I will anyway. You know that.
She nodded.
But not tonight.
What do you need? A sad smile touched her face.
Help with Tula's flag. I believe asking her parents would only increase their grief.
We entered her tower and climbed 2 flights of stairs to her workroom. Comfortable chairs and tables littered with sewing and art supplies filled the large chamber.
My seamstress skills are limited, Zatora said.
She moved around the room, adding fabric and thread to the one empty table near the chairs.
But not for the lack of practice. I can sew and embroider, but I'm better at drawing. When I have the time, I've been experimenting with painting on silk.
Satisfied with her collection, Zatora dug through another pile of cloth and pulled out a sheet of white silk. She measured and cut off a 5-foot by 3-foot rectangle. The background will be white for Tula's purity and innocence, Zatora said.
Yelena, what should I put in the foreground?
When she saw my confusion, she explained,
A grief flag is our way of honoring the dead. It's a representation of the person.
We decorate it with the things that made up a person's life, and when we raise the flag high, it releases their spirit into the sky.
So what would best represent Tula?
My thoughts went immediately to Ferda. A poisonous snake, red flames for pain, and a jar of curare all came to mind.
I scowled, unable to imagine Tula's spirit free.
She had been trapped in the blackness of Ferda's soul because of my stupidity.
He's a cunning demon, isn't he? Zatora asked, as if reading my mind. To have the boldness to live in the keep, to have the skill to kill under our roof, and to have you blame yourself for it. A masterful trick, I'd say.
You're starting to sound like a certain story weaver, I know, I said.
I'll take that as a compliment, Zatora replied.
She sorted through colorful squares of silk.
Let's see. If you had listened to Iris and remained behind, the killer would have gotten Tula and you.
But I had gotten my energy back, I said. Iris had thought it best not to mention Valak's help.
Only because you wanted to follow Iris,
Zitora raised a thin eyebrow. But I wouldn't have gone with Ferda willingly.
Truly? What if he had promised not to kill Tula in exchange for you?
I opened my mouth, then closed it, considering. She had a point.
Once you say the words or move with intent, it's done. What follows after will not change that,
and he would have killed Tula anyway, Zitora said. She lined the colored squares along the table's edge.
If you had stayed behind, you would both be gone,
and we wouldn't have the information from the sand seeds. Are you trying to make me feel better? Zitora smiled.
Now, what should we put on Tula's flag?
The answer came to mind. Honeysuckles, a single drop of dew on a blade of grass, and glass animals. Opal had told me about Tula's glass animals. Most of them Tula had either sold or given away as gifts, but Tula kept a small collection of them near her bed. The unwelcome thought of what we would sew onto Opal's flag rose in my mind. I suppressed it, squashing the image into a small corner of my brain. I would not let Ferda murder Opal. Zitora drew shapes on the silk and I cut them out. When the pile met her approval, we arranged them on the white silk. Honeysuckles bordered the flag, while the blade of grass rose in the center, surrounded by a ring of animal sculptures.
Beautiful, Zitora said. Her eyes shone with grief. Now comes the tedious part, sewing all these bits of cloth onto the background.
I threaded needles for her, the extent of my sewing ability. After a while, she told me to go back to my room and get some sleep. Don't forget about our agreement, Zitora called as I started down the steps. I won't. Now that she was back, I could begin teaching her some self-defense. With my thoughts preoccupied with scheduling her training, I was startled by two guards who waited for me outside Zitora's tower. What do you want? I demanded, pulling my bow. Orders from Fourth Magician. You're to be protected at all times, said the larger of the two men. I huffed with annoyance. Go back to the barracks. I can take care of myself. The men grinned. She told us you would say that, the other man said. We follow her orders. If our unit fails to protect you, we'll be assigned to clean chamber pots for the rest of our days. I could make your job very difficult, I warned them.
The stubborn stiffness of their shoulders never softened.
There is nothing you can do that's worse than cleaning chamber pots, said the large man.
I sighed. Giving them the slip to search for Opal would be hard, which was probably why Iris had assigned them to me. She knew that I would go hunting as soon as I could.
Just stay out of my way, I growled.
I turned my back on the guards and headed for the apprentice's wing. The dark campus seemed to mourn, and an uneasy quiet filled the air. The raising ceremony for Tula was scheduled for dawn. Then life would continue. I would have my afternoon lesson with Iris. Cahill had already reminded me of our evening ride. I would attempt to keep my promise to Moonman. All these events would occur despite the threat to Opal. Or should that be in spite of the threat? My guards refused to let me enter my rooms until one of them searched for intruders. At least they remained outside afterward and didn't insist on staying with me. But Iris had informed them that I would attempt to escape, because when I looked out my bedroom window, I saw one of the guards standing there. I closed and locked the window shutters. The guards blocked both exits. I could see Dax's grin in my mind, knowing he would delight in telling me the gossip and rumors from the other students about my protectors. I sat on the bed in annoyance and sealed my fate. The soft comfort of my pillow called to me. I would rest only a moment, clearing my head so I could plan a way to lose my two shadows. During the next 5 days, I had only one successful escape. The morning after I had helped Zitora with Tula's grief flag, I stood next to Iris for Tula's raising ceremony. Tula's body had been wrapped in white linen strips and covered with her flag. The leader of the Cowan clan spoke kind words over her body as her parents wept. All four master magicians attended. Zitora soaked a handkerchief with her tears,
but I clamped down on my emotions and focused on Opal, hardening my resolve to find her. Tula's body was to be taken home and buried in her family's graveyard. But according to Sishan beliefs, during this farewell ceremony, her spirit transferred to the flag. The people surrounding me believed that when this pennant of white silk fluttered above Rose's tower, Tula's spirit would be released into the sky. But I knew better. Tula's spirit was trapped inside Ferda, and only his death would release her. For me, Tula's flag not only signaled Ferda that we had agreed to his exchange, but also symbolized my determination to find and stop him. The morning after Tula's ceremony, I led my guards to the baths. The pools and changing rooms bustled with students getting ready for classes. And despite the assortment of wary looks aimed my way, I managed to pay a few novices to create a diversion near the back entrance. The ruse worked. I dashed out of the baths and out of the keep before the soldiers at the gate could recognize me. The guards stationed at the keep's gate monitored who came in, and unless there was a crisis, they only paid a passing interest to those who left. Once out of sight, my first task included finding Fisk and his friends. The market was just stirring to life. Only a few customers wandered through the stands at this early hour. I found Fisk playing dice with a group of children. He ran over to me.
"Lovely, Yelena. How can I assist you today?"
His smile lit up his face. The other children surrounded me, waiting for instructions. They appeared clean and cared for. They earned money for their families, and I thought that once I finished this ugly business with Ferda, I would give them more help. I remembered to tell them about the keep's need for another gardener, though, and was rewarded to see one girl run home to tell her father. "I need guides," I told Fisk. "Show me all the shortcuts and hidden areas of the citadel." While they took me through back alleys and forgotten quarters, I questioned them about the people. Anybody new? Anybody acting strange? Had they seen a young, frightened girl with a man? They regaled me with wild stories, but the information was not what I needed. As we moved, I searched the surrounding homes with my magic, seeking Opal, or the wisp of someone else's magic, or anything that might give me a clue as to her whereabouts. The day was well spent, and only my hunger could stop me. Fisk led me to the best meat griller in the Citadel's market. As I ate the juicy beef, I decided I would continue my search late into the night and then find a place to sleep. I would have plenty more days to spend hunting Opal. At least that had been my intention until Iris and my guards ambushed me. Hidden behind a shield of magic, she prevented me from sensing them until too late. The instant the two soldiers grabbed my arms, she seized control of my body, pushing aside what I had thought to be a strong mental barrier. The full power of a master magician reduced my own defenses to dust. Unable to move or to talk, I stared at her in complete surprise. Even though I had missed Iris's morning lesson and blocked her efforts to find me with her magic, I thought she would understand my mission. I was unprepared for the severity of her anger. My guards, looking grim and scared, clung to me.
"You will not leave the keep again. You will not lose your guards again, or I will lock you in the keep's prison. Understand?"
"Yes, I'm..."
"I'll be watching."
"But..."
Iris severed our mental connection with a head-aching abruptness, yet her magic still gripped my body.
"Take her back to the keep," Iris ordered the guards. "Take her to her rooms. She may leave them only for lessons and meals. Do not lose her again."
The guards flinched under her searing gaze. The larger one picked me up and threw me over his shoulder. I suffered the indignity of being carried through the citadel, across the keep's campus, and dumped onto my bed. Iris didn't relinquish control of my body until the next morning, although I still felt a band of her magic wrapped around my throat. By then, I was ready to throttle anyone who dared to get in my way. Avoided as if I carried a disease, I could only vent my ill humor on the guards as they escorted me through the campus. After 3 days of this hell, I stood next to Iris in the great hall of the council building, waiting for the Ixion delegation to arrive.
Iris had used my lesson time to lecture me on proper Sishan protocols and diplomacy. She had refused to let me talk to her about anything other than the lecture topic. My frustration at not knowing about the search for Opal seized my chest like a vice. The Great Hall was decorated with large silk banners representing each of the 11 clans and each of the master magicians. Hung from the ceiling, these colorful banners flowed down 3 stories of marble walls until they reached the floor. Tall, slender windows separated the banners, allowing the sunlight to stripe the floor with gold. The council members wore formal robes of silk, embroidered with silver thread. Iris and the other masters wore their ceremonial robes and masks. I remembered Iris's hawk mask from when she had visited the commander in Ixia, and I looked at the others with interest. Rose Featherstone, first magician, wore a blue dragon mask. Bane Bloodgood, second magician, had donned a leopard skin mask. And a white unicorn covered third magician, Zatora's face. According to Fisk, these animals acted as the magician's guides through the underworld and throughout their life. They had found them while enduring the master-level test, which, from the little bits of information I could gather, seemed a horrible ordeal. Cahill had donned the midnight blue tunic with the silver piping that he had worn to the New Beginnings feast. The color complemented his blonde hair, and he looked regal despite his hard expression. Present to assess his enemy for weakness, he promised to keep quiet and not draw attention to himself. Otherwise, the council members would have banned him from the greeting ceremonies. Fidgeting, I twisted the wide sleeves of my formal apprentice robe around my arm. Pale yellow in color, the hem of the plain cotton garment touched my feet and revealed the black sandals Zatora had given to me. I plucked at the skin on my neck and pulled at the robe's collar.
"What's wrong?" Iris asked.
Her rigid posture radiated disapproval. It was the first time since my house arrest that she had mentally communicated to me. I wanted to ignore her. My anger at her punishment still sizzled in my blood. Even now, Iris's magic wrapped around my neck.
She hadn't been kidding when she had said she'd be watching.
The power I would need to remove her magic would exhaust me, and I didn't possess enough nerve to provoke her again.
"Your leash chafes."
My thoughts were cold.
"Good. Maybe now you'll learn to listen and to think before you act. To trust others' judgments."
"I've learned something."
"What?"
"The harsh tactics of the commander are not unique to Ixia."
"Oh, Yelena."
Iris's stiff demeanor melted. The hard band of magic around my throat disappeared.
"I'm at my wit's end. You're so focused on action. You have a single-minded determination that barrels through situations. You've been lucky so far, and I don't know how to make you understand that if Tula's killer absorbs your power, he will be unstoppable. Citia will be his to rule. This goes beyond you and your desire for revenge. This affects us all. All options must be carefully considered before any action is taken. That is the Sishan way."
She shook her head, sighing.
"I have forgotten that you're a grown woman. Once you have complete control of your magic, and when this killer is found, you can do as you like. Go where you please." "I had hoped you would have become a part of our efforts to keep Citia a safe and prosperous place to live. But your unpredictability will only jeopardize our community."
Iris's words cut through my anger. To be free to do anything I wanted seemed a foreign concept.
The first time in my life that I had been offered such a choice.
I envisioned traveling all over Citia with Kiki and with no worries or promises to keep. To be unconnected. Moving from one town to the next. Experiencing the culture.
Or climbing through the jungle with my father, learning about the medicinal properties of some leaf.
Or sneaking into Ixia to meet with Valak.
She presented an attractive option.
Perhaps I would take her up on it, but not until after I captured Ferda and fulfilled my promise to Moonman. Deciding I would try harder to work in the Sishan way, I said, "Iris, I would like to help find Opal."
Sensing my intentions, she turned to me and studied my expression.
There's a meeting scheduled after the formalities with the Ixians.
You're welcome to come.
I smoothed out the sleeves of my robe as the row of trumpet players sounded the arrival of the Northerners. An immediate hush fell over the great hall as a stately parade of Ixians entered the room. The ambassador led the procession. The tailored cut of her black uniform lent her an air of importance. Two diamonds sparkled from her collar. The commander must have shown her great favor in allowing her to wear the precious stones for this mission. Her long, straight hair was fading toward gray, yet her almond-shaped eyes held a powerful vitality. Sudden recognition pierced my heart. Chapter 24. I quickly scanned the rest of the ambassador's retinue, searching for the person who had to be there. Her aide, walking one step behind her, wore the same uniform as the ambassador, except the red diamonds on his collar had been stitched with thread. His bland face was unremarkable, so I moved my gaze to the others. Some of the guards looked familiar, but two captains near the middle caught my eye. Ari's massive muscles strained the seams on his uniform. His tight blonde curls looked almost white in the sunlight. His face remained impassive when he glanced at me, but I could see two red blotches spreading on his cheeks as he fought to keep from smiling. Janko sauntered next to him, looking much healthier than when I had said goodbye to him in Ixia. Then his pale face had been tight with pain, and he hadn't the strength to stand. The result of defending Iris against Mogkin's men. Now he moved his lean build with an athletic grace, and his skin was tanned. Straight-faced, he peered at me, but I could see pure, mischievous glee dancing in his eyes. It was wonderful to see them, but I kept searching. Clutching my butterfly pendant through my robe, I scrutinized all the guards' faces. He had to be here. If the commander was here, posing as the Ixian ambassador, then Valak had to be close by. But Valak didn't know about Commander Ambrose's secret. Only I knew about what the commander called his mutation, having been born a woman with a man's soul. Since Valak didn't know the ambassador was the commander, he probably would be with whoever was posing as the commander in Ixia. Unless the commander had sent Valak on another mission. Or even worse, maybe Valak still hadn't recovered from giving me his strength. Maybe he had been injured while weak. Or dead. Horrible scenarios chased through my mind as the delegation exchanged formal greetings. I willed the pleasantries to move faster. My need to question Ari and Janko about Valak grew with every second. With my thoughts on Valak, I found my eyes lingering on the ambassador's aide. His straight black hair fell to his ears and clung limply to his head. A soft, fat nose sat above colorless lips and a weak chin. He appeared to be bored as he scanned the counselors and magicians in the room with no hint of intelligence in his blue eyes. Our gazes met for a moment. Sapphire blue lightning struck my heart. That rat! I wanted to slug Valak and kiss him at the same time. His expression never changed. He gave no sign of having seen me at all as his attention refocused on the counselors. I could hardly bear the rest of the meeting. Too impatient to wait until the meeting concluded, I tried to link with Valak's mind. I encountered a formidable barrier stronger than any of the master magicians. Valak sensed the magic and glanced at me. When the introductions and formalities came to an end, the Ixian delegation was served refreshments, and everyone milled about in small groups. I headed for Ari and Janko, who stood near the ambassador as if they had metal rods strapped onto their backs. But Bavol Kakao, my clan leader, stopped me.
"I have a message from your father," Bavol said.
He handed me a small scroll. I thanked him. This was only the second time I had talked to him since he had arrived at the Citadel. He had delivered the clothes Nutty had sewn for me. Even though I wanted to talk to my friends, I inquired after the clan.
"Dealing with the usual petty problems and trying to combat some fungus that is eating through the wood on a few walls," he smiled. "I've no doubt that Esau'll figure it out. Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to check to make sure the ambassador's suite is ready."
Before Bavol could walk away, I touched his sleeve. "What does the suite look like?" I asked him.
Puzzled, he said, "Our most opulent chambers. The Citadel's guest suites have every convenience."
"Why?" "The ambassador doesn't like opulence. Perhaps you could have some of it removed? Simple elegance would suit her better." Bavol considered.
"She's a cousin of Commander Ambrose. Have you met her?"
"No, but I know most Ixians agree with the commander's dislike for extravagance."
"Your concern is noted. I'll see to the changes."
Bavol hurried away. I broke the wax seal on the scroll. Unrolling the paper, I read the note, then closed my eyes for a moment. In my mind's eye, I saw my storyline twist into a big, complicated, noose-like knot. According to the letter, Esau and Pearl were on their way to the keep to visit me. They planned to arrive 5 days before the full moon. Who else could come? If I had gotten a message from the underworld announcing Rayad and Mogkin's arrival, I wouldn't have been surprised. Tucking the note away, I shook my head. I had no control over these events, and I would deal with my parents when they arrived. I approached the Ixians. The ambassador chatted with Bane, second magician. Her gold eyes flicked to me, and Bane stopped speaking to introduce us.
"Ambassador Signe, this is Apprentice Yelena Liana Zaltana."
I clasped her cool hand in the Ixian greeting, and then bowed formally in the Sishan salutation. She returned the bow.
"I have heard much about you from my cousin. How are your studies progressing?"
"Very well, thank you. Please extend my best wishes to Commander Ambrose," I said.
"I will."
Signe turned toward her aide.
"This is Advisor Ilum."
I held my face in a neutral expression as I shook his limp hand. He mumbled a greeting, then ignored me as someone not worth his time or attention. I knew Valak had to be acting, yet his complete disregard made me worry if his feelings for me had changed. I didn't have much time to brood, though. When Bane led Signe and Ilum to meet another counselor, Ari grabbed me in a quick bear hug.
"What's with the dress?" Jenko asked.
"Better than that wrinkled uniform," I countered. "And is that gray hair in your goatee?" Jenko smoothed a hand over his facial hair.
"A little present from my run-in with a sword. Or should I say, from when the sword had a run-in with me?"
His eyes lit up.
"Want to see the scar? It's cool."
He started pulling his shirt out of his pants.
"Jenko," Hari warned, "we're not supposed to be fraternizing with the Sishans."
"But she's not Sishan. Right, Yelena? You haven't gone south on us, have you?"
Jenko's voice held mock horror.
"Because if you have, I can't give you your present."
I took my switchblade out, showing the inscription to Jenko. "What about sieges weathered, fight together, friends forever? Does that change if I become an official southerner?" Jenko rubbed the hair on his chin, considering.
"No," Ari said. "You could change into a goat and it would still apply."
"Only if she made us some goat's cheese," Jenko said.
Ari rolled his light blue eyes.
"Just give her the gift."
"It's from Valak," Jenko said, digging into his pack, "since he was unable to accompany the delegation."
"Suicide," Ari said. "The Sishans would execute Valak if they caught him in their lands."
Concern for Valak coursed through me, and I glanced around the hall, looking to see if anyone else had recognized him. Everyone seemed to be engaged in conversation except Cahill. He stood alone, watching the Ixians. He met my gaze and frowned. At Janko's triumphant grunt, I turned back to my friends. Once I saw what Jenko had in his palm, all thoughts about Cahill disappeared. A black stone snake with glints of silver twisted 4 times around his fingers. The snake's scales had been carved with a diamond pattern along its back, and 2 tiny sapphires gleamed from its eyes, one of Valak's carvings.
"It's a bracelet," Jenko said.
He took my hand and slipped the snake over it until it fit onto my forearm.
"It was too small for me," Jenko joked, "so I told Valak he should give it to you. Looks like it fits you perfectly."
I marveled at my gift. Why had Valak chosen a snake? Apprehension coiled in my stomach.
Things have been quiet since you left, Ari said. Even though we're not part of his corps, Valak made Janko a fox statue and a horse for me. They're the nicest things we own.
We talked until Ari and Janko had to follow the ambassador to her suite. They told me they would have rotating shifts to guard Signe and Ilam, and would have some time to talk to me again. I offered to show them around the citadel, and perhaps the keep. Iris found me before I left the Great Hall, and she accompanied me through the citadel streets to the meeting to discuss the ongoing efforts to find Opal. My ever-present guards, who had been discreet during the ceremonies, followed us.
Janko looks great, Iris said. That was a quick recovery from such a severe injury. I'm glad.
Iris's words reminded me of something Storyweaver had said. With all the commotion surrounding Opal and the delegation, I hadn't discussed Moonman's claims with her. Iris, what is a soul finder?
Don't say any more aloud,
Iris's voice admonished in my mind.
That's not something you want anyone to overhear.
Why not? Why all the fear? My hand sought Valak's bracelet. I twisted it around my arm. She sighed.
Sishan history is full of wonderful and brave magicians who have joined the clans together and stopped the wars. Unfortunately, those tales aren't told in the taverns and to the children. The tales of the few magicians who have caused harm seem to be the ones whispered by the fireside. With Mugkin's corruption, and now this beast that has Opal, I don't want rumors and stories to circulate about a soul finder.
Iris fiddled with the brown feathers on her hawk mask that she carried.
About 150 years ago, a soul finder was born. He was considered a gift from the underworld. His strong magic affected people's souls, healing both emotional and physical pain. Then he discovered he could pluck a soul from the air before it could float to the sky, waking the dead. But something happened. We don't know what, but he became bitter, and he went from helping people to using them. Keeping the souls for himself, he woke the dead without their souls. These emotionless creatures followed his orders and had no remorse for their actions. That ability is considered an aberration and is against our ethical code. With his soulless army, he had control of Cythia for many, many dark years before the master magicians could stop him.
Before I could ask for details, Iris continued her story.
Yelena, you have all the abilities of a soul finder. When you breathed Fortula, you shocked me and alarmed Rose. That's why I was so harsh with you about losing your guards. I had to show Rose I could control you. But today you made me realize that was wrong. It was probably the same type of panicked response that pushed the soul finder over the edge. We need to discover the extent of your abilities before we categorize you. Who knows? You could be a master magician.
I laughed, thinking of how easy it had been for Iris to ambush me and break through my magical defenses. Highly doubtful, I said. And also doubtful was Moonman's claims that I was a soul finder. Tula's soul was stolen. I could breathe for her, yet I couldn't wake her without it. I shared some abilities with a soul finder, but obviously not all. As we drew closer to the keep's entrance, I noticed a small beggar wearing a dirty cloak huddled by the wall, shaking a cup. Annoyed that I was the only one to notice, I walked over and dropped a coin into the cup. The beggar looked up, and I saw a flash of Fisk's smile before he hid his face again.
We have news about the one you seek. Come to the market tomorrow.
Hey, you! Stop bothering the lady, said one of my guards.
I spun to glare at the guard. When I turned back, Fisk was gone. I mulled over Fisk's message. My first instinct involved ditching my guards tomorrow and meeting with him, an Ixian response. But I decided to try the Sishan approach and see what the others had found regarding Opal. Leaf leaned over a table in the meeting room, studying a map. He greeted my arrival with a surprised expression, but I refused to acknowledge him and had to suppress a sudden fury that welled in my throat. I had no idea how I would fulfill my promise to Moonman, when all I wanted to do was shake Leaf and demand an explanation.
Iris broke the silence and filled me in on the group's efforts so far. They had divided the citadel into sections, and one magician was assigned to search each quarter. Counselor Harun, the Sandseed's councilman, had taken his people to hunt for Opal in the part of the Avibian Plains that bordered the citadel. No clues had been found.
"We'll send guards to search every building in the citadel," Rose said, sweeping into the meeting room with Bane on her heels.
"Which will cause Opal's immediate death," I said.
Rose sneered at me. "Who invited you?"
She gave Iris a poisonous glare.
"She's right, Rose," Iris said. "News of the searches would spread like a barn fire, and he would be alerted."
"Does anyone have a better idea?"
"I do," I said into the silence. All eyes turned toward me. Rose's gaze froze my blood. "I have friends in the Citadel who can get information without calling attention to themselves. Seems they might have already learned something, but I need to meet them at the market tomorrow." Under my sleeve, I twisted Valak's snake around on my wrist, waiting for their response.
"No," Rose said. "It could be a trap."
"Now you're concerned for my welfare? How touching. Although I think jealousy is the real emotion," I shot back.
"Ladies, please," said Bane. "Let us focus on the task at hand. Do you trust this source, Yelena?"
"Yes."
"It would not look unusual for Yelena to go to the market to shop. Her guards would be with her," Iris added.
"The guards would scare away my source," I said, which was true enough for my purposes. "Also, my source might lead me somewhere, so I'll have to move quick."
"But you'll need protection. We could disguise your guards," Iris offered.
"No, they're not the protection I need. I can defend myself against a physical threat, but I need to defend against a magical one." Iris was a powerful ally. Iris nodded, and we made plans for the next day. After the meeting, I went to the dining room to grab something to eat, and I picked up a few apples for Kiki and Topaz. My guards continued to follow me, and it felt odd how I had grown used to their presence. At least I didn't need to worry about Gol trying another surprise attack, especially when I had so many other things to occupy my thoughts. I hadn't been able to ride since my house arrest, and even if I couldn't leave the keep, at least I could practice riding. Kiki's mother had sneered at my saddle, so I wanted to learn how to ride bareback. Besides, it could be a useful skill to learn. In an emergency, I wouldn't have time to saddle her. And I needed the distraction. Bad thoughts of losing my guards and sneaking into a certain advisor's room in the Citadel's guest quarters kept surfacing. I drowned the dangerous impulse. I wouldn't risk Valak's life for my own selfish reasons. Pulling up my sleeve, I examined Valak's gift in the late afternoon sunlight, running a finger along its back. The bracelet even felt like a snake, although its body language seemed to indicate a protective rather than an aggressive stance. Again, I wondered at his choice. Perhaps he had somehow witnessed my nightmares about snakes? But why make one as a present?
Wouldn't a mongoose make a better gift?
Kiki waited for me by the pasture's gate. She nickered in greeting, and I fed her an apple before climbing over the fence. My guards took up positions outside the gate, close but not too close. They were learning. As Kiki ate, I checked her over. She had nettles snarled in her tail, and dried mud on her belly and caked around her hooves. "Didn't anyone groom you?" I asked aloud, tisking.
"She wouldn't let anyone near her," Cahill said.
He held a bucket of brushes and combs over the rail.
"Seems only you can do the honors."
I took the handle. "Thanks." I pulled out a curry comb and began to loosen the mud on her coat. Cahill rested his arms on the fence.
"Saw you talking to the northerners today. You know some of them?"
I glanced at Cahill. A serious expression gripped his face. So his timely arrival with the supplies hadn't been a coincidence. He had waited to ambush me with questions about the Ixians. Choosing my words with care, I said, "Two of the guards are my friends."
"The ones who taught you how to fight?"
Cahill tried to sound casual.
"Yes." "What division do they belong to?"
I stopped brushing Kiki and stared at him. "Cahill, what do you really want to know?"
he stammered. You're not thinking of jeopardizing the delegation, are you? Planning to sabotage the meetings? Or are you more interested in ambushing them on their way back to Ixia? He opened his mouth, but no words came out. That would be unwise, I continued. You'll make both Citia and Ixia your enemy. And besides...
Besides what? He demanded.
The commander's elite guards surround the ambassador. It would be suicide to make a kidnapping attempt.
Aren't you just full of wisdom today? Cahill said with a sharp jab of sarcasm. Your concern for the welfare of my men is truly heartwarming. Are you sure you're not just protecting your northern friends? Or perhaps protecting your heartmate?
He had to be guessing. I called his bluff. What are you ranting about?
I was watching you when the delegation arrived. Although your face never moved, I saw your hand fly to that butterfly pendant under your robe. I know the one who gave that to you is here. In fact, he gave you another gift today.
I turned back to work on Kiki, hiding my face from Cahill. If you know so much, then why are you asking me questions?
Who is he?
When I refused to answer, Cahill continued.
It's the man who's missing half of his right ear, the one who gave you the snake.
Cahill wore such a smug expression that I laughed.
Janko?
We bicker like brother and sister. No, he was just delivering the gift.
I don't believe you.
I shrugged. Here. I handed a wire brush to Cahill. You can get the nettles out of her tail. When I saw him hesitate, I added, Don't worry, she won't kick you. We worked for a while in silence. Cahill, though, wasn't content with the quiet.
You're happier now that your northern friends are here.
I missed them, I agreed.
Would you want to go back to Ixia?
Yes, but that's impossible because I'm a magician. And there was a signed order for my execution, but I thought it prudent not to mention that.
Nothing's impossible.
Cahill finished Kiki's tale and began combing her mane.
When I gain control of Ixia and free the people, you would have a place by my side if you chose to accept it.
Avoiding his unspoken question, I gave him a dubious look. Do you still believe Citia will support you even after they've been making nice with the northern delegation? With the passion of a mystic, Cahill said,
All my life I have been told I would rule Ixia one day. Every lesson, every interaction, and every emotion was tailored to that single purpose. Even the council encouraged me to plan and train and wait for the perfect moment to attack.
Cahill's blue eyes radiated such a pure intensity that I almost stepped back.
Then the North agrees to a trade treaty and they visit Citia. He spat the words out. Suddenly the commander is the council's friend, and my reason for existing is no longer supported. The council has failed to realize that the commander is deceiving them, and when he tips his hand, I'll be there. I have many loyal followers who are equally unhappy about the council's dalliances with the North.
You're going to need a trained military if you plan to go against the commander's forces, I said. And if Valak...
What about Valak?
Cahill grabbed my arm. His fingers pressed my bracelet into my skin. I winced in pain. Kiki cocked an ear.
Kirk?
No,
not yet.
If Valak discovers what you're planning, he'll stop you before you can rally your men.
Do you really think he can stop me?
He asked.
Yes.
I pulled my arm out of Cahill's grasp, but he caught my wrist with his other hand and yanked my sleeve up with his free hand, exposing the snake circled around my arm. Before I could stop him, he let go of my sleeve and tugged my collar down. My black stone butterfly pendant swung free. The silver spots on its wings glinted in the sunlight, matching the silver on the snake's body.
And you would know, Cahill said, releasing me.
His face took on a stunned expression as he made a sudden realization. I staggered back.
As the commander's food taster, you worked with Valak every day. He had to teach you about poisons and poisoning techniques.
He stared at me in revulsion.
Merrick told me that when the royal family members were assassinated, the assassin would leave behind a black statue that glittered with silver. It was the assassin's calling card. Only after the commander took control of Ixia was Valak named the assassin.
I returned to brushing Kiki. That's a big leap in logic, Cahill. Based on a bedtime story, which I'm sure gets more interesting with each telling. and a couple of trinkets. Valak is not the only person who carves things out of those rocks. Think about that before you leap to conclusions. Refusing to meet Cahill's gaze, I put the grooming equipment back into the bucket and led Kiki to her stall. By the time I finished filling her water pail, Cahill had gone. My guards trailed me to the baths and stayed outside while I washed off the horsehair and dust that coated my skin. The sun had set by the time we reached my rooms. I waited outside, shivering in the cold night air while one guard searched inside. Given the all clear, I entered my dark living room. I shuddered and locked my windows against the chilly wind, then lit a fire in the hearth. "That's better," said a voice that set my soul on fire. I turned. Valak lounged on a chair with his booted feet propped up on the table. Chapter 25. Valak held the Valmer statue I had bought for him long ago, admiring it in the firelight. He wore a simple black shirt and pants. The clothes did not appear to be as tight-fitting as his hooded sneak suit, but seemed snug enough not to impede his movements. "How did you fool your guards? They're not very good. They forgot to check the ceiling for spiders." Valak grinned. His angular face softened. Startled, I realized he wasn't in disguise. "This is dangerous." "I knew falling for you is dangerous, love." "I meant coming to Cydia, being here in the magician's keep with guards just outside my door," I gestured wildly. "It's only dangerous if they know I'm here. According to them, I'm just Ambassador Signe's lowly and dull-witted aide." Valak stood, his movements liquid. The black fabric of his clothes clung to his lean build. He stretched his arms out to the side. "See? I'm not even armed." He made a weak attempt to look innocent, but I knew better. "Should I guess how many concealed weapons you have, or should I strip search you?" "A strip search is the only way to be absolutely certain." Valak's deep blue eyes danced with delight. I took 3 steps and was wrapped in his arms, where I belonged. No confusion here. No worries here. No troubles here. Just Valak's scent, an intoxicating combination of musk and spice. During our short trip to the bed, I found 2 knives strapped to Valak's forearms, darts and other throwing implements tucked inside his belt, a switchblade strapped to his right thigh, and a short sword in his boot. I knew more weapons hid within his clothes, but once I touched his skin, the game ceased to matter as we became reacquainted. With his body next to mine, I felt all the empty places inside me fill with his essence. Home. It wasn't until deep into the night that we stopped to talk. Lying next to him under the blanket, I thanked him in a low voice for the snake bracelet and told him about Tula, Opal, and the reason for the guards.
"And you said it was dangerous for me," Valak said, pointing out the irony. "Good thing I'm here. You'll need backup that can't be influenced by magic."
Valak's immunity to magic could be considered another concealed weapon. Hope of recovering Opal unharmed bloomed in my chest for the first time since her capture.
"How can you provide backup? You're supposed to be with the ambassador."
He grinned. "Don't worry. I've got that covered. This is not the first time, nor will it be the last time I've been in Cydia. Keeping tabs on our neighbors has always been one of my duties as security chief.
Fun stuff."
"Until you're caught," I said. My mood soured, but Valak seemed unaffected by my comment.
"There's always that chance. Part of the allure, I suppose."
He nuzzled my neck and sighed with regret.
"I better get back. It'll be dawn soon."
He rolled out of bed and began to dress.
"Besides, I don't want to be here when your boyfriend arrives."
"Who?" I sat up. "The blonde that follows your every move with his lovesick eyes," Valak teased. "Cahill?" I laughed, dismissing him. "He thought Janko was my heartmate. I think you should feel more jealousy toward my horse. She's the one who has stolen my heart." Valak stilled as the amusement dropped from his face.
"What's his name?"
"Her name is Kiki." He shook his head. "Not the horse, the blonde."
Cahill.
Cahill Ixia? The king's nephew? He's alive?
Valak seemed confused. I thought you knew, I said.
I had imagined Valak had let Cahill live once he had reached Citya. But now Cahill's comment about Valak forgetting to count the bodies when he had assassinated the royal family came to mind. With a growing horror, I realized my mistake.
Valak, don't kill him.
He's a threat to the commander.
A dead flatness covered Valak's eyes. He wore his stone face. Unyielding. Uncompromising.
He's my friend. Valak's cold killer's gaze met mine. The second he becomes more than a potential threat, he's dead.
Valak had pledged to protect the commander, and only his love for me kept him from assassinating Cahill that night. Valak's loyalty was without fail. If the commander had given him a direct order to kill me, Valak would have. Lucky for us that the commander hadn't given Valak that order. I'm glad the commander is safe within Ixia's borders. Valak's face softened, and he laughed. He's taking a vacation. He's the only person I know who thinks hunting sand spiders is relaxing. Aren't you worried he'd get stung? My skin crawled just thinking about the poisonous spiders. They were the size of a small dog and jumped with a lethal quickness. But then I remembered that the commander was really in the Citadel's guest quarters. No, I still can't beat the commander in a knife fight. His skills are more than adequate to handle a sand spider. Plotting royalty is another matter, though. I'll have to keep an eye on this Cahill. I knew it was a matter of time before Valak found out about Cahill's plans to regain his kingdom. Then what would I do? Those thoughts reminded me about something Cahill had said that hadn't sounded right. Valak, did you used to leave your carvings behind when you assassinated someone? Have you been listening to Sishan rumors? He smiled. I nodded, but I don't necessarily believe all that I hear. Good. Although I'm embarrassed to admit that one is true. I was young, cocky, and stupid, enjoying being known as the death artist. I even started leaving a carving before I began a job, letting my victim find it. Valak shook his head at the memory. That nonsense almost got me killed, so I stopped it altogether. Valak finished dressing. I'll be at the market today in case anything happens. He kissed me, and I clung to him for a moment, wishing we could run away and forget about soul-stealing magicians and Cahill. But that wasn't for us. Dealing with prisoners, schemers, and killers seemed to be our lot in life. Besides, we would probably grow bored living in safety without any problems to worry about. But still, I wished for it. With reluctance, I let Valak go. He nodded toward the door. I opened it and distracted the guard. When I returned to the living room, the heavy darkness pressed on my skin as the icy air soaked into my bones. Valak was gone. Iris and I walked to the market that morning. The bleak, overcast sky reflected my mood. I huddled in my cloak. It was the first time I needed to wear it during the daytime. People crowded the market. They hurried to get their shopping done before the dark rain clouds that hovered on the horizon could descend on the Citadel. I made a few small purchases before I felt a familiar tug on my sleeve. Fisk stood next to me. He flashed me a smile. His face no longer held the gauntness of malnutrition, and I could see his busy gang of children carrying packages for the shoppers.
"You wanted to find a strange man living with a young girl?"
he asked.
"Yes. Have you seen them?"
He grinned, holding out his hand.
"Information costs money."
"I see you're branching out into a new trade. Very wise," I said as I handed him a Sishan copper. "But watch who you deal with. Some won't take kindly to your inquiries." He nodded with understanding, and I saw a wisdom far beyond his 9 years in his light brown eyes. I suppressed a sigh. In Ixia, Fisk's intelligence would be encouraged. He would grow up to be an advisor or a high-ranking officer. But in Citya, he had grown up on the street, begging for food and money. But not anymore. I smiled. "What do you know?"
"I'll show you."
Fisk pulled on my hand.
Iris, who had remained silent during our exchange, asked,
"Can I come with you?"
Fisk ducked his head, looking at the ground.
"If it pleases you, Fourth Magician," he mumbled.
A wry grin touched Iris's face.
"So much for my disguise."
Fisk glanced up in surprise.
"Only the beggars who work near the Council's Hall would recognize you, Fourth Magician. With not much to do all day, they study the Council members. It's a game to be the first to recognize one of the Master Magicians."
Iris considered Fisk's comments. He squirmed under her scrutiny until he couldn't stand it any longer and turned away from her stare.
"Come, this way," he said.
We followed him through the citadel, cutting across back alleys and empty courtyards. I wondered if Valak followed us. The residents seemed intent on their chores and hardly noticed our passage. Fisk stopped before we reached an open plaza. A large jade statue of a tortoise with intricate carvings on its shell occupied the middle of the square. The dark green turtle shot water out of its mouth and into a pool of water. Pointing to a building on the opposite side of the plaza, Fisk said,
"On the second floor lives a man with red lines on his hands. He is new, and no one knows him. He wears a cloak that hides his face. My brother has seen a young girl enter the building, carrying packages."
I looked at Iris.
"Was this quarter searched with magic?" I asked her with my mind.
"Yes, but not by a master."
She stretched out her awareness, and my mind's eye went with her. Our minds touched a young woman nursing a baby on the first floor. Her thoughts on getting the baby to nap after he'd eaten his fill. Another woman on the third floor worried about the possibility of rain.
We could feel no one on the second floor,
but Ferda's magic matched Iris's in strength, and he would not be easy to detect.
"I could push harder, but he would know we were here," Iris said.
"I will come back with some reinforcements."
"Who?"
"Rose and Bane. Together we should be able to subdue him. And once he's unconscious, he'll be easier to transport to the Keep's prison."
"Why unconscious?"
"A magician is helpless when unconscious."
"Sleeping?" I asked in alarm.
"No. Only if it's a drugged sleep or you get knocked out."
"What happens once he wakes?
Won't he be able to use his magic to escape?"
"The Keep's prison cells contain a power loop. If a magician tries to use magic within the cell, the loop absorbs the magical power and directs it back into the cell's defenses until the magician is exhausted."
Fisk, who had been staring at us in fascination, cleared his throat.
"Do you think the one you seek is living here?"
"Could the young girl your brother saw be the one with the baby?"
Iris asked Fisk.
He shook his head. "That's Ruby. Sometimes she hires me to watch JD."
I grinned. "You're turning into quite the entrepreneur."
"I bought my mother a new dress," he said with pride.
Rain began to fall as we made our way back to the market. With a wave, Fisk joined his friends and disappeared. The market emptied as the vendors packed up their wares. One woman bumped into me in her haste to get out of the rain. She shouted an apology, but never slowed her pace. Rumbles of thunder echoed off the hard marble walls of the citadel.
"I'll find Rose and Bane. You return to the Keep,"
Iris instructed.
"But I want to be there when you search that building."
"No. Stay at the Keep, Yelena. He wants you. And if something goes wrong and he threatens to hurt Opal, you know you'll give yourself up. It's too dangerous."
I wanted to argue, but Iris was right, and if I followed her despite her instructions, she wouldn't trust me again. Iris headed toward the council hall to find Rose, who had an appointment with the Ixian ambassador. A meeting I would have loved to eavesdrop on. The arrogant master magician against the powerful commander. The rain began to fall in sheets, soaking my cloak. When I tucked my cold, wet hands into the pockets, my fingers touched paper. I couldn't remember putting anything there. I hadn't worn my cloak since coming to Citya, although I had used it to sleep when we had camped on the Avibian Plains. Perhaps the paper contained a cryptic message from Storyweaver. I laughed. It seemed to be something he would enjoy doing, leaving a puzzling note in my cloak.
However, the mystery would have to wait until I found some shelter from the rain. My guards waited at the keep's entrance. They followed me as I headed toward my room. After they searched the interior, I invited them inside, but they declined, citing some military regulation. After I started a roaring fire and hung up my sodden cloak, I extracted the paper. It was a message for me. My hands turned to ice as I read the words. And even the heat from the hearth couldn't warm them up. "What does the message say?" Valak asked, coming from the bedroom. I had ceased to be amazed by his abilities. Dripping wet, he must have come in through the bedroom window past one of my guards. He plucked the paper from my hand. She had some rudimentary skills. Probably a pickpocket hired to give you this note. Did you get a good look at her face? I made the belated connection between the woman who had bumped into me in the market and the message. No. Her hood covered most of her head. Valak shrugged, but his gaze pierced me after he scanned the note. Interesting development. Yes, Valak would think this turn of events interesting. However, I found myself conflicted. Seems the killer is one step ahead of the magicians, he said. He knows they won't exchange you for Opal, so he has taken matters into his own hands. How important is Opal's life to you? Valak had, as usual, gotten to the heart of the matter. Ferda's note specified a location and a new date for the exchange. 3 nights before the full moon, which was 4 days from now. I guessed that he needed some time to get me ready for the Ifi ritual. My skin crawled with dread, and I forced horrible images of being raped and tortured from my mind. I could tell Iris and the others. They would set a trap for Ferda. But they wouldn't let me near the site, so the trap was bound to fail. Or I wouldn't tell Iris about the note and would go to the meeting site alone. Iris's warnings of what would happen if Ferda absorbed my magic filtered through my mind. He would then be powerful enough to control Cydia. Let Opal die to save Cydia? I had promised myself that I wouldn't let that happen to her. And what would stop Ferda once Opal died from tricking another magician into giving him her soul? Nothing. I would need to keep this new situation tucked deep beneath my surface thoughts. Iris had been true to her word to not pry into my mind, but with the fate of Cydia at stake, I wouldn't be surprised if she broke her promise. My gaze met Valak's. Magic couldn't detect him. Her life is important, I said, answering his question, but capturing the killer is vital. What do you need, love? Chapter 26. Valak and I made some initial plans for rescuing Opal. When he returned to the Ixian delegation, I felt a renewed sense of purpose. The next day, I used my free time to practice controlling my magic and to do some physical training in preparation for my encounter with Ferda. Iris, Rose, and Bane had raided the apartment where, according to Fisk, the man with the red hands lived. The rooms were empty, and by the mess that was scattered on the floor, the occupants had left in a hurry. Either someone had tipped him off, or he had felt the master's approach. A dead end either way, which made Valak and my plans critical. I also began demonstrating self-defense techniques to Zatora, finally keeping my side of our bargain to trade the third magician's pile of clothes for defense training. The review helped in my training as well. The rain from the day before puddled in the training yard and splattered us with mud as we worked on basic self-defense techniques. An apt student, Zatora quickly grasped the concepts. "I pull my wrist out of your grasp through your thumb?" Zatora asked. "Yes, it's the weakest part," I grunted as she yanked her arm from me. "Perfect. Now I'll show you how to not only free your wrist, but twist your hand so you can grab your attacker's arm and break it." Her eyes lit up with glee, and I laughed. "Everyone thinks you're so sweet and nice. I almost feel sorry for the first person to try and take advantage of that. Almost." We worked for a while until her moves became more instinctive. "That's a good start," I said. "Those moves will help you against someone stronger than you. But if you go against a well-trained opponent, you'll have to use different tactics." Zatora looked past my shoulder, and her tawny eyes grew wide.
You mean I could take on someone like him?
I turned. Ari strode into the training area with Jenko at his heels. Wearing his sleeveless training shirt and short pants, his powerful physique was apparent. While Jenko might be leaner than his partner, I knew his speed could match Ari's strength. They carried bows and broad smiles. My keep guards looked queasy and undecided. I waved them off.
Yes, I said to Zatora. With the proper training, you could escape from him. You wouldn't last in a sparring match, but that's not what self-defense is all about.
Remember what I told you? Hit and...
Get, Jenko added. Run like a bunny with a wolf on its tail. I see you're passing our wisdom on, Yelena.
Jenko turned to Zatora and said in a conspiratorial whisper, she was trained by the very best instructors in all of Ixia.
Another rule of self-defense is never believe everything you hear, Ari said when Zatora appeared to be impressed by Janko's words.
How did you get past the keep's guards? I asked Ari.
He shrugged his massive shoulders.
The guard asked for our names and our reason for visiting. We told him, and he went into the guardhouse to consult with someone. When he came out, he told us where to find you.
There must be a magician posted at the gate who could communicate by magic to others in the keep. That was good to know.
Can we join you? Jenko asked. I learned a few new self-defense moves. They're nasty, too.
We were just finishing up, I said. Zatora wiped her face with a towel.
I need to get cleaned up before my council meeting.
She hurried off with a wave.
Are you too tired for a match? Jenko asked. I want to make sure you're at your best when I beat you.
He smiled sweetly.
He's been getting into trouble all day, Ari said. Too much time spent standing around guarding Ambassador Signe and Advisor Ilam as they sat through one meeting after another.
Boring, agreed Jenko.
The fact that Valak had managed to fool Ari and Jenko with his Ilam disguise made me feel a little better about his presence in Citya.
I could be half asleep and still beat you, Jenko, I countered with my own boast.
He spun his bow and stepped back into a fighting stance. I picked my bow up and set my mind into my zone of concentration. I attacked.
Good to know you're keeping fit, Jenko puffed.
He retreated a few feet, but counterattacked with determination.
She's strong and spry, but can she fly? Jenko chanted.
I smiled, realizing how much I had missed his fighting rhymes.
A second before he moved, I knew that he would feint high to draw my guard up so he could strike my exposed ribs.
My failure to take the bait and to counter the rib strike shocked Jenko into silence. Laughing, I drove him back, swept his feet out from under him, and scooted back to avoid the splash of mud when he dropped into a puddle. Wiping his eyes with the back of his hand, Jenko said,
Gee, Ari, and you were worried about her.
She's learned a new trick since coming to Citya, Cahill said.
He was leaning on the training yard's fence and must have watched the match. Ari's posture turned defensive and alert as Cahill moved to join us. Armed with his longsword, Cahill wore a loose sand-colored tunic and brown pants. After I introduced Cahill, Ari still didn't relax. He kept a wary eye on him. I hoped Ari and Jenko didn't recognize Cahill's name. Names of the dead king's family were not mentioned in the commander's history books of the takeover, and if the older citizens of Ixia remembered, they kept it to themselves.
What trick? Jenko asked.
A magic trick. She anticipated your every move by reading your mind. Devious, isn't she?
Cahill asked. Before Jenko could respond, I said, I didn't read his mind. I kept my own mind open and picked up on his intentions.
Sounds like the same thing to me, Cahill countered. Leaf was right when he accused you of using magic to beat me that time we sparred in the forest. Not only devious, but a liar, too.
I placed a hand on Ari's arm to keep him from throttling Cahill. Cahill, I didn't need to read your mind. Truth is, you're not as skilled as Ari and Jenko. In fact, they taught me to find that zone of concentration, or else I never would have the chance to win against them. There is only one person I know who could take them on and win without any help, I said. Jenko considered.
One?
He scratched at the scar in his right ear, thinking.
Valak, Ari said.
Oh yes, the infamous Valak. I'm sure his lover would think that highly of him.
Or should I call you his spy?
Cahill stared at me in challenge.
I think you should leave.
Now, Ari said. His voice rumbled close to a growl.
This is my home, thanks to Valak. You leave, Cahill said to Ari, but his eyes never left my face.
Janko stepped between us.
Let's see if I have this right, he said to Cahill. Yelena beats you, so you want a rematch, but you think she'll use her magic instead of her fighting skills to win. That's quite the quandary.
Janko pulled at his goatee.
Since I taught her everything she knows, and I don't have any magic, thank fate, how about you fight me? Your longsword against my bow.
You taught her everything? Ari asked. Janko waved away his comment.
Details, details. I'm thinking big picture here, Ari.
Cahill agreed to the match. With a confident expression, Cahill assumed a fighting stance, then attacked. Janko's bow blurred, and he unarmed Cahill within 3 moves. His mood didn't improve when Janko told Cahill he needed to use a lighter sword.
She helped you, Cahill said to Janko. I should know better than to trust a bunch of northerners.
Cahill stalked away with the promise of a future encounter flaming in his eyes. I shrugged his comments off. Cahill wouldn't ruin my time with my friends. Challenging Janko to another match, I swung my bow toward him, but he blocked it with ease and countered with one of his lightning-fast jabs. The three of us worked together for a while. Even connected to my mental zone, Ari still beat me twice. Ari grinned.
I'm trying not to project my intentions, he said after dumping me in the mud.
The daylight disappeared in a hurry. Tired, covered with layers of mud and sweat, and smelling as if I could attract dung beetles, I longed for a bath. Before Ari and Janko headed back to the Citadel, Ari put a large hand on my shoulder.
Be extremely careful. I don't like the way Cahill looked at you.
I'm always careful, Ari. I waved and aimed my sore body toward the bathhouse. The cooling season was ending. I could see the Ice Queen constellation glittering in the clear night sky. The half moon glowed like a jewel. Only 6 days until the full moon. I shivered in the cold air. The puddles would be frozen by morning. My thoughts lingered on Cahill and how fast our relationship had changed back to those first days when he had believed I was a northern spy. A full circle. I reached for my snake bracelet, spinning it around my arm. Only when I noticed that the campus seemed strangely empty and quiet did I look around for my guards. Used to their presence, it took me a few moments before I realized that they no longer followed me. Pulling my bow, I searched for attackers. I saw no one. I drew power to project my awareness out, but a bug bit me on the neck, and distracted, I slapped at it. My fingers found a tiny dart. The hollow metal end dripped with my blood. I lied to Ari. I wasn't careful. I had trusted my guards to keep me safe. Hundreds of excuses for my lapse churned through my mind as the world around me began to spin. No one to blame but myself. Unfortunately, this acknowledgement of my own stupidity didn't prevent the blackness from claiming me. Chapter 27. A sharp pain and a burning numbness in my shoulders roused me from sleep. With a rank taste in my dry mouth, I glanced around. Nothing looked familiar. And why was I standing? Not standing, but hanging. Looking up, I spotted the reason for my position. My wrists were manacled to the ends of a long chain that hung from a thick wooden beam in the ceiling. Once I put my weight on my feet, the pain in my shoulders eased somewhat. Studying my surroundings, I saw rusted shovels and dirt-encrusted hoes lining the wooden walls. Spiderwebs clung to dull-edged scythes. Dust coated the tools. Sunlight filtered in through small cracks and holes, illuminating what I guessed to be an abandoned shed with a muted light. My confusion about how I had gotten here disappeared the moment I heard his voice behind me.
We'll start your lessons now.
Gol's satisfied tone caused my stomach to lurch.
Turn around and see what I have planned for you, he said.
My skin prickled with fear, but I forced my face into a neutral expression before I spun.
A smirk lit Gol's face as he gestured to a table on his right. Weapons and exotic instruments of torture covered the top. A wagon containing an empty burlap sack was to the left of Gol. The structure was bigger than I had thought. The shed's door loomed behind him, appearing impossibly far to me, but in reality, only 10 feet. Gol followed my gaze and smiled.
Bolted and locked. We're in a forgotten place far away from the keep.
He picked up a small black leather whip that had metal spikes on the ends.
The keep.
I pulled some power to me and projected a desperate mental call.
Iris.
How are the ribs? I asked, trying to distract him. He frowned and touched the side of his chest.
That horse is gonna make a tasty stew.
He smacked his lips.
But that's later.
He raised the whip.
Yelena, thank fate you're alive. Where are you?
Iris's worried voice sounded in my mind.
A shed somewhere.
Gol stepped closer to strike me with the whip. I kicked him in the stomach. He jumped back more from surprise than pain.
Me mistake, he said, retreating to his table. Not to worry. I'll fix.
He picked up a dart, dipping it in a vial of liquid.
The sleeping potion.
I thought fast.
I need more information. Is Ferda with you?
Iris asked.
Not Ferda. Gol.
Gol?
No time. I'll explain later. Gol loaded the dart into a hollow pipe. He aimed. I laughed. The pipe wavered as he squinted at me in confusion.
I can't believe it, I said.
Believe what?
He lowered the weapon.
That you're afraid of me.
No, not afraid.
Terrified.
I laughed again. You can't beat me in a fair fight, so you ambush and drug me. And even when I'm chained, you're still scared.
Am not?
He exchanged the pipe for a pair of manacles, then dove for my feet. I struggled, but he outweighed me. In the end, my ankles were manacled together. Gol then staked the 6-inch chain between the cuffs to the floor. No more kicking, but I remained awake, and I had another trick. Magic. My mind raced through options. I could try and freeze the muscles in his body, but I didn't know how. Gol chose another whip from his table. This one was longer, with braided leather and small metal balls tied into the fringes on the end. His arm blurred. I projected a confusing array of images into his mind. Gol lost his balance and fell to the ground.
Huh?
He seemed confused. As he regained his feet, I caught a slight movement behind Gol. The bolt moved, and the knob turned. The door burst open with a rush of light. Two figures stood in the doorway. They pointed their swords at Gol's heart. Ari and Janko.
Yelena, are you all right?
Ari asked. His eyes never left Gol's surprised face. Janko came over and inspected the chains.
Keys? He asked Gol, who pressed his lips together. Guess I'll have to do it the hard way.
Janko pulled his lockpicks from his pocket. My first rush of relief at seeing my friends cooled. This rescue wouldn't stop Gol from trying again. Even if he was arrested for kidnapping, Gol would harbor his grudge until freed. And years from now, I might be in the exact same position. I had to deal with him. He needed to know that he couldn't win against me. I shook my head at Janko. I've got the situation under control. Go back to the keep. I'll meet you there. Janko stared at me in astonished silence. Ari, though, trusted me.
Come on. She doesn't need our help.
Ari sheathed his sword. Janko recovered. He flashed me one of his mischievous grins.
I'll bet you a copper that you'll be free in 5 minutes, he said to Ari.
Ari grunted in amusement.
A silver on 10 minutes, he countered.
I'll bet you both a gold coin that she kills him, Valak said from behind them. They moved aside and he entered, still dressed in his advisor Ilum disguise. The only way to take care of your problem, right, love?
No killing, I said. I'll manage.
He's my man. I'll handle this, Cahill said from the doorway.
Valak spun, but Cahill just stared at him for a moment before coming inside.
Gol, Stand down, Cahill ordered.
Valak disappeared from sight. The crowded shed seemed to shrink in size, and by this point, I wouldn't be surprised to see Iris and the other masters following Cahill. We could all have a festival. During the conversations and arrivals, Gol's face had transformed from stunned to horrified, and finally settled into stubborn determination.
No, he said to Cahill. Gol, you were right about her, but this isn't the way to deal with her, especially not with her two henchmen nearby. Release her. I don't take orders from you. Everyone else can pretend you're in charge. I won't. Are you challenging my authority? Cahill demanded. You don't have any authority with me, Gol shot back.
Cahill's face turned bright red as he sputtered.
How dare, gentlemen, I shouted. You can fight it out later. Everyone leave. Now. My arms are killing me.
Janko pulled Cahill from the shed. Ari shut the door. Gol stood there, blinking in the sudden darkness.
Where were we? I prompted. You can't expect me, he gestured toward the door.
Forget about them. You have more to worry about in here than outside.
He sneered. You're not really in the position to be boasting.
And you don't fully understand what it's like to go against a magician.
The sneer faded from his lips.
You think I'm just some girl to be taught a lesson, that I should fear you.
You're the one who needs the lesson.
I gathered power to me and reached my awareness out to Gol's. The word magician had only caused a brief feeling of doubt in Gol's mind.
After all, he thought, if she was a good magician, she wouldn't have been so easy to catch.
A momentary lapse, I said. Since he had no magical power, he couldn't hear my thoughts, but I might be able to control him. I closed my eyes and projected myself into Gol, taking the chance that if I could do it with Topaz, I should be able to do it with a person. He jumped as if struck by lightning when I entered his mind. Although glad that my transfer worked, being closer to Gol's slimy thoughts made me wish for Topaz's clean mind. When I focused Gol's eyes on me, I understood why he thought so little of me. My hair hung in messy clumps. The combination of closed eyes, dirt-streaked face, and mud-covered clothes made me seem pathetic, a helpless figure in need of a bath. I felt his panic when he realized he had lost control of his body. He could still think, see, and feel. I marveled at his physical strength, but I encountered some difficulty moving his body around. The proportions felt strange, and balancing his body took a concentrated effort. He tried to regain control, but I pushed his weak efforts aside. I searched for the key to the manacles and found them in his pack under the table. Then I unlocked and removed the manacles from my body's feet. Supporting myself with one of Gol's arms, I unlocked the wrist cuffs. I grabbed my body before it could fall to the ground and lifted it up. It felt light as a pillow. My body breathed and blood pulsed. I carried it and laid it gently on the ground near the door. Using Gol's thumb, I raised my left eyelid. Although my body lived, the spark of life was gone. Unnerved, I stood and backed away. When the feeling of utter helplessness overcame Gol, I let him experience that sensation for a long while. Picking up a knife from the table, I cut a shallow line along his arm. I felt his pain from the cut, but it was muted and distant. Resting the tip of the blade on his chest, I wondered if I plunged the knife into his heart, would I kill us both? An interesting question that would have to be answered at another time. Kicking off his boots, I snapped the manacles around Gol's ankles, then I shortened the chain hanging from the overhead beam before locking his wrists into the cuffs. I savored the combination of fear, discomfort, and chagrin that coursed through his mind before I projected myself back toward my own body. The shed spun for a moment when I opened my eyes. Fatigue coursed through my limbs. I stood in slow motion, but managed a smug smile at Gol's new predicament. As I headed for the door, I thought I probably wouldn't have discovered that magical skill working with Iris or the other magicians. And what exactly had I done? Transferred my magic? My will? My soul?
I shied away from those disturbing thoughts. Taking control of someone's body and forcing him to move must be in violation of the ethical code. But when Gol kidnapped me, he became a criminal. The ethical code didn't apply to him. I almost laughed. I guess I should be grateful Gol attacked me. Now I knew another defensive magical move. Ari and Jenko waited for me in the overgrown field that surrounded the shed. I saw a dilapidated fence and a collapsed barn, and guessed we stood on an abandoned farm outside the citadel. Valak and Cahill hadn't waited for me. Ari smiled as Jenko slapped a silver coin into his huge hand. "Your problem?" Ari asked me. I left him hanging.
"What took you so long?" Jenko complained.
I wanted to prove my point. "Where's, Advisor Ilum and Cahill?"
"Why the sudden concern for Ilum?" Jenko asked with mock sincerity. "He's a grown man with surprising abilities. That stuffy old boar appeared out of nowhere, did a dead-perfect impression of Valak's voice, and disappeared as if by magic. The man's a genius. I should have known he would come along. Valak wouldn't miss all the fun."
The smile dropped from Ari's face.
"Valak's going to get caught. Cahill made a beeline for the Citadel, probably to tell the council members about Valak."
"Great disguise, though," Jenko said. "He had us fooled."
"Cahill already suspected Valak was here," I said, shivering in the cold morning air. Now he knew for certain. "I'm sure Valak can handle it." My tired mind, though, couldn't produce a good solution. Ari went over to the shed and picked up my backpack from where it leaned against the side.
"I thought you might need this."
He handed it to me. I found my cloak inside. Wrapping the warm garment around me, I moved to sling the pack onto my back, but Ari took it from me.
"Let's go," Ari said.
He and Jenko led me through the fallow fields. We passed an empty farmhouse. "Where are we?" I asked.
"About 2 miles east of the Citadel," Ari said.
I stumbled just at the thought of walking 2 miles.
"How did you find me?" "We followed your guards last night to make sure they knew what they were doing. By the time we realized they had been hit, you had disappeared," Ari said.
Jenko grinned. "The magicians were frantic. Search parties were sent."
He shook his head as if amazed by the uproar.
"We had no idea what they would find in the dark. We just hoped they wouldn't ruin the trail. Once the sun was up, it took us no time to follow the tracks. Gol used a wagon to wheel you out of the keep and citadel."
I thought of the burlap sack lying in the wagon. Gol must have hidden me in that sack.
"I guess Cahill followed us," Jenko said.
Scratching his scar, he added,
"Of course, you didn't want our help. Now I have to go beat up some soldier just to keep my ego intact."
As we reached the east gate of the citadel, I spotted a commotion near the guardhouse. A loose horse was giving the guards some trouble.
Kiki.
She stopped when we crossed through the gate.
"Lavender Lady tired. Need ride."
"How did you find me?"
"Follow scent of strong man and rabbit man."
She referred to Ari and Jenko. I apologized to the gate's guards about Kiki's disruption. Ari helped me onto her back and gave me my pack.
"We'll catch up with you later," Ari promised.
Before Kiki and I headed toward the keep, I thanked my friends.
"For what? We didn't do anything," Jenko grumbled.
"For caring enough to follow my guards. And the next time, I might need the help."
"There better not be a next time," Ari said, giving me a stern look.
"How touching," Jenko said, pretending to wipe his eyes. "Get going, Yelena. I don't want you to see me cry."
He faked a sniffle. "I'm sure your ego can handle it," I said. "Or will you need to beat up some trainees to feel like a man again?"
"Very funny," he said.
I waved and asked Kiki to take me home. On the way, I connected to Iris and updated her on what had happened. She promised to send some guards out to arrest Gol. "If I don't make it to my room, I'll be asleep in the barn," I said, yawning. I felt her hesitate. "Now what?"
"Your parents arrived this morning."
"Oh, no."
"Oh, yes. Esau is here with me. But when your mother found out you were missing, she climbed a tree. And we can't convince her to come down. She's hysterical and won't listen to us. You'll have to talk to her."
I sighed. "I'm on my way. Where is she? Pearl was in one of the tall oak trees next to the pasture. Kiki took me to the base of the tree. A handful of orange and brown leaves still clung to the branches. I spotted my mother's green cloak near the top. I called to Pearl, telling her I was fine. You can come down now, I said.
Yelena, thank fate. Come up here where it's safe, she said.
I resigned myself to the fact that getting Pearl down would be difficult, and took off my cloak and backpack, dropping them to the ground. Even standing on Kiki's back, I still had to stretch to reach the lowest branch. My mother's climbing ability was impressive.